depends, you know. It depends. And as I said, I'm not a financial advisor and I don't give you financial advice. People come to me and they say, I've got a credit card. And credit cards are great, actually. Credit cards, if you use them wisely and carefully, they can be actually a really good way to monitor, first of all, monitor your spending. And secondly, if you're using the bank's money for a whole month and then pay it off at the end of the month, you're actually keeping your own money, earning interest on your own money. So that's another conversation. But if you are using, somebody today, it was a young girl that I met here today, was doing some coaching with. She said to me, you know, I've got this debt. I went and did a university course and I put it on my credit card and I really want to pay it off and you know, it really bothers me. And I said, well, yes and no. I said, that course, that money on your credit card, what did you do? And she said, well, I used it to pay for my course and I had to buy food and I had a part-time job as well. But obviously there were times when there was a shortfall and I put that money on my credit card. And I said, so do you consider that a worthwhile expense? And she said, well, it was, but now I'm left with this debt. And I said, well, is the debt manageable? And she said, yes. And I said, well, in that case, you got to actually be grateful for your debt, because in that sense, that debt has actually helped her. She's now about to move to another job, more money, more pay, and a much better role. And that debt has actually helped her to take that bigger step, a step up. And so to me, that's good debt. That's okay debt. And you need to let that go, because if she's, and we were talking about it, and I said to her, you got to be grateful for that debt, because that debt has actually been worthwhile for you. Now, if you'd spent that money going, you know, buying clothes and going on holidays and, you know, drinking in wine bars and things, then that's not good, because that won't have actually given you anything more than a hangover and, you know, a wardrobe stuffed full of more clothes you don't need. So it is about looking and looking at debt and looking at it very practically to see, well, is it good debt or bad debt? If you've got a investment properties that are making you money, and I'm not talking about negatively geared investment properties. I'm not a big fan of negative gearing. I'm talking about positive gearing, things that bring you in an income, and you've incurred debt to do that. Well, hey, you know, if it's bringing you in an income over and above what you're paying, well, that's good debt. And in fact, good debt is a good thing to have, because you need some debt in order to leverage yourself and to move forward. But as I said, I'm not a financial advisor, and everybody has their own level of comfortableness with their debt. But yeah, very much so. There is a thing as good debt, and there is, as we all know, very much a thing of bad debt. So being fearful of debt, it just depends on what the debt actually is.
Okay, if you use that word fearful, because now we're getting into the nitty-gritty of the emotion. My understanding for some people is that they spend on whatever it is that they're going to spend on simply because they don't like feeling unhappy or restless, or there's some disquiet within their spirit and their soul. So one way of shutting that down is to go and buy something and make myself feel happy, kind of thing, mm-hmm. Right? So do you actually work on somebody's mindset to that level where you ask the hard question, you know, what is eating at your soul? And why are you doing spending to shut that up?
Absolutely. And we look at it, you know, as pain relief, I suppose. When you are in pain, you get pain relief. And whether we look at all the icks, you know, alcoholic, shopaholic, chocoholic, you know, all of those different icks, they are all forms of pain relief. So when you are in pain, you seek pain relief. And for many people, that means either going and spending to make themselves feel good, or you know, having another glass of wine, or, you know, another drug, or whatever it is that is your thing. I understand that, and I know that in the past that used to be me as well. I nearly went bankrupt with a business that I had, and being a single mother with two kids and blah, 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 you know, I had it, and there were many, many, many sleepless nights that I had. And I think one of the things that I learned to do was obviously to control my spending, which I've done, but also to allow myself the fear. And I think that that's really important. People try and squash it down and go, oh, I'm nervous about money. What am I going to do? And it tends to kind of stick in their brain and worry them throughout the day. I still have money worries like everybody. I still, you know, have concerns. I work for myself, so money's, I don't have a regular paycheck, as it were. And so one of the practices that I do is I give myself time to worry. Does that make sense? So if in the middle of the day I'll suddenly get a panic attack about, you know, where the next dollar's going to come from, I say to myself, no, I'm not going to think about that now. I'm actually going to think about that. And normally in the morning, I spend a lot of time meditating and give myself time to think about that. Do you know what I mean? So I put it off until a time when I actually can think about it constructively, work through it from a mental aspect, and don't just let that worry chew me up all through the day and just waste so much effort and energy and good vibes, if you like. So that's a very, very practical tool that people can do. If you can do it, I certainly do it a lot, is to set aside time for worry or for fear or for anxiety around money. But make sure you do give yourself time to sit down. So, you know, tomorrow morning, I will sit down and go, well, you were worried about that yesterday. You were worried that maybe, you know, you weren't going to get XYZ coming through. What are we going to do about it? How's it going to work? And then at least you're focusing on it and you can come to some resolution rather than just having twirling and whirling around in your head. Is that sort of helpful? Make sense?
Oh, yes, indeed. So you've allocated, like everything in your life, you've allocated a portion of time so that you can focus exclusively on it. And during that time, do you, as well as allowing yourself that, oh my goodness, sort of feeling, but also come up with a solution?
Yeah, well, if you, it's like anything, you know, even if you're tackling a new interface on your website or something that you need to do, whatever task it is, once you actually sit down, you know, focus on it properly, take away any other distraction, you know, whether you're building a boat or writing an essay or whatever it is you're doing, balancing a bank account, once you take the time to focus on it, then things start to unfold and you get answers, or you know who to ask, or you know questions come up and you think, okay, well, where can I go to get that answer? And it doesn't just become this massive fear which kind of escalates until it becomes, you know, all encompassing. If you can allocate time for it and allow yourself to be fearful, we all get fearful. I mean, I'm sure even Warren Buffett wonders whether he's going to get his next $1 billion coming through, or, you know, Mr. Bill Gates or whatever. We're all human, and, you know, his level of fear probably isn't quite like my level of fear, but it's about not squashing it, because once you suppress it and go, no, don't worry about that, that's when you go for an ick. You go for a bunch of, you know, an alcohol or a block of chocolate or go and buy another pair of shoes or something. But if you can say, no, that's that feeling again, let's go and explore it. I don't have time right now to put the focus and energy that I need to on that. How about we wait until tomorrow morning and let's allocate half an hour and we'll sit down and see if we can't solve that issue, or at least help to alleviate the fear then and there, rather than have it churning and bubbling around for the, you know, incessantly.
Yeah, I know for a fact that our emotions, like it or not, people like to think that they are logical beings, but in fact, a lot of their decisions and actions are driven by their emotions. And if your emotions are out of control, you're going to make decisions that are not going to be in your best interest in the long run. So do you help your clients with coming to terms or processing the emotions of, let's say, fear, like, you know, what's going to happen to me? And when you actually go there, you realize you're not going to end up being a bag lady pushing your trolley and living under a bridge. Really, there are ways of getting around it, but because you're not looking at it or not wanting to look at it because of the fear, you never go there to resolve the problem or the issue.
Absolutely. It's funny you talk about bag lady, because I know about bag lady. I have that was one of my biggest things when I was, you know, many years ago when I was having money issues. I would wake up at usually 2 or 3 in the morning, and there I was lying in my comfortable bed, and in the next instant I was a bag lady on the street, right? And And like all things in life, what you resist persists. So the more that I was resisting Bag Lady, the more it was coming up for me. And I would look at people in the street and go, I'm going to be like that in a few months. Oh, and, you know, the worry and the fear and the drama of it all. I have a wonderful coach in Australia, Nicholas Di Castello, and he calls it awfulizing it. So what one of the secrets is when you have a fear, is to awfulize it. And by that I mean take it to the nth degree. So I used to, you know, when I wake up in the middle of the night and I'm fearing, suddenly thinking, oh my goodness me, how am I going to do this and that and the other? And you know, literally going from warm, comfy bed to Bag Lady. First of all, I sort of feel around me and I say to myself, am I okay right now? Am I actually out in the street groveling through a garbage bin right now with all my stuff in plastic bags? I thought, no, I'm not there yet. Good. Well, for the moment, I'm okay. I'm here in my comfy bed. And then I actually started to think of myself, well, okay, what happens? What would happen if you couldn't pay your rent and your kids weren't allowed to go here and there and da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you know? And I thought, okay, well, if I couldn't pay my rent, well, I'd just get out of this flat, put everything in storage, and you know what? I've got lots of friends with some great homes all around the world. I'll go and mooch off them for a while. And my kids, well, hey, you know, go and live with your father for a bit. I've had you for 10 years. You'll be okay living with them. I sound really crass here, but I'm just saying to you that with each little point of the Bag Lady element, I actually thought through, well, how would that work? What happens if you had no money coming in? What happens if all your investments fell down the lavatory and you didn't get any money? Well, okay, you know, maybe I could sing for a living and get a bit of money that way, or go on Social Security or something like that. So I was taking it to the nth degree until it came to a point, Lorway, where actually the idea of being a Bag Lady, believe it or not, didn't actually really scare me that much, because, you know, as much as I wouldn't want to go there, I wasn't fearful of it anymore, because I kind of knew that I would never actually really go there, that I had enough friends and family around who would support me, and that I had my brains and a, you know, a level of intelligence that would help me to find a job if I needed one. So I got rid of the fear of Bag Lady by embracing it, if you know what I mean, so that it no longer tend to worry me. And I thought, well, great, wouldn't it be wonderful if you didn't have to have all of those bills coming through every month and you just lived, you know, a bit more free. And, you know, I rang up all my friends and said, if all this fails, can I come and stay with you for a while? And they said, sure you can, you know. So you kind of being able to just resolve it in your own mind's eye, the fear dissipates. And, you know, I could well turn out to be a Bag Lady. Who knows? No one knows what life has in store for us. And if that happens, well, you know, I'm pretty sure that it won't, because of the work that I've done on myself and knowing who I am as a person. I'm pretty sure that I would get help long before I came to that point in time. But it is about looking at the fear and turning into the fear and actually putting a pair of, you know, like when you were little used to run from the door and jump on my bed, because I always thought there was a monster underneath the bed. Well, if you know, as soon as I got down out of the bed and looked under the bed and checked and really looked and saw that there wasn't anything evil under there, the fear went away. And it's like that with all of our fears, money issues as well. The sooner you can look at it and identify it and really come to terms with it, to be at peace with it, then the more likely it is to start to dissipate and melt away.
I think that basically what you're talking about is the freedom from the fear. And it reminds me of that Janis Joplin song that says, you know, freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. So if you're not hanging on to stuff, the stuff that they can't take away is who you are, basically. And on that other note, you're talking about, you know, going losing everything. I've read that a lot of successful people have been bankrupt before, so they know what it's like to go right to the edge, you know, and the end of, and then but to pick themselves up and come back again. It's not so much whether you become a bankrupt or lose everything, it's how resilient your spirit is to come back. And that's where I want to ask you, in terms of the people who do come back after a, let's say, a lady who realizes her husband's run off with a, you know, 25-year-old secretary and she's in her 50s.
Yoga instructors these days, Lorway. Everybody seems to be running a yoga instructor.
Sorry, no offense to yoga instructors out there, but just as a matter of, you know, speaking, they would have had to come back from a situation where they would feel like the rug's been pulled out from under them, right? and you're there to pick up the pieces and help them, but they won't move unless they feel that they've got something within them that they can reach into and say, look, I'm not going to let this beat me. I'm going to start again.
And I had to do that. And, you know, I was in a business and that ended, and I had invested a lot of effort, time, money, and my business partner walked away from the business. She went bankrupt, and I was determined not to do that. And thank goodness I was able to work my way out of it. I'm still, you know, not 100% through it. But the bottom line is that I know what it feels like to literally have nothing. And I came from a fairly well-off family, and so, you know, some of the things of having to tell my parents where I was at and having to fess up to the fact that things were not as rosy as they were, that's probably one of the biggest things. But to come back from that and to be able to go, you know what, I'm actually grateful for that. Does that make sense? I'm grateful for that learning. It was a shitty, horrible, horrible time. And, you know, and I don't wish it upon anyone. And I'm sure anyone who's been in that hole knows what it's like. I call it reaching up from bottom. You basically have got nowhere else to fall. But having been there, I know that I will never, ever go there again, because I know now what it takes for me to get out of that, and I have the resilience and the strength to do that. Now, I'm not advocating everybody goes out and gets bankrupt now, girls. That's not what I'm talking about here. But it is about taking the learning and having the strength to be grateful for the learning, whatever the learning is. And I know women who, as I said, their husbands left and they're left with nothing, or they, you know, thought that they were wealthy and they're suddenly not. And it's about taking the learning and going to yourself, okay, this is what's happening. What am I going to do about it? I can either do the doona dive and lie here and cry and whinge and wail and you know, the world is a horrible, nasty place. Or I can go, okay, you know, take responsibility, because you are responsible for everything that you attract into your life, both good and bad. Take the learning and go, okay, where do I go from here? And that's where I come in, where you start to set goals and targets, and even just in little small increments, if you can just do one thing that, you know, picks you up, takes you to the next week, and then the next week, you can overcome anything, really. And it is about just being okay with where you are, accepting what is, as they say, and allowing yourself to move forward from that point.
Okay, so the self-awareness is there for you, but for a lot of women who are just faced with the idea that the husband comes on one day and says, look, I want a divorce, that's it, and, you know, I'm taking everything you have, maybe a small allowance or whatever it is, they are not going to be in that place you talk about of being philosophical enough to say, ah, this is what is. You know, after 30 years of supporting my husband, he's just given me a thank you and out the door, don't let it hit you on the way out. So you come in as the coach for them, basically, to support them, hold their hand, and teach them even the fundamentals and the basics of looking after their money, but also on the inside, looking after themselves emotionally and spiritually. So how does a person sort of like get in touch with you? I mean, everybody needs a coach as far as I'm concerned. They've got the perspective that's objective. We don't. We are so engrossed in ourselves. We don't see what's going on. And we need somebody out on the outside saying, hey, you're not, you know, you're not doing what you're going to, that's going to be helpful to you. So let's hold you accountable.
So it's funny, actually, because I was talking to someone today about coaching here in New York, and I don't know if it's America-wide. Certainly, it seems that most people have therapists here, and which I find very, what's the word? There's a very different thing between a therapist and a coach, and not that I have anything against therapists. I think that they're very, very good, but it seems that a lot of people here have therapists, certainly some of the people that I've been talking to, and a lot of them haven't even heard of coaching. And one of the big differences between a therapist will kind of go there with you, and you go there once a week and you blab on about this and that and the other and whoa, 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 and a coach will go, okay. And I know that I could be sounding fairly flip, and I don't want to do that, because I don't want to belittle the experiences that women go through. And believe me, I know what it feels like to be at the bottom. But a coach will then go, okay, what do you want? Like, okay, this is the situation. Do we go and fight him in court? Do we do this? Do we do that? Let's put together a program. Where do you want to go from here? How can you see yourself in a month's time, in a year's time? Start to look at the future. And that's what a coach does, is bring you forward. So a therapist, as they say, will help you walk again, but a coach will help you to run the 1 minute mile. So it's about being very clear and very present to the situation that you're at, and then having a look at, okay, well, what do we want? And of course there's time for grieving and crying, and as a coach we do go some of that stuff, and we do talk through some of that stuff and work through it. But there comes a point when it's no use crying anymore. We need to move forward now, and that's what's so important about the life coaching, as opposed, I think, to a lot of the therapy work, is that we then start to put some strategies in place. What do you want? What do you need right now? I call it to stabilize the boat. I talk about life being on a journey in a big boat, and when the boat's rocky and everything's kind of all skew-whiff, it's very, very unnerving. So often what we need to do is to go in and stabilize the boat. I had a client who came to me. She was going through a very, very bitter, acrimonious divorce with her husband. Her husband was a lawyer, and it was not fun. And it had been 3 years. She had some young children. She was taking care of them. She was really struggling. And, of course, letters were being bombarded to her all about the divorce and da-da-da-da, and what are you going to do? And these two little girls that she had to look after. It was really difficult. Anyway, when she came on board with the coaching, we actually stopped all of that. We took the focus off the divorce, because it was so encompassing for her. She was so lost, and she just, the boat was just going like this. So I said to him, her, enough, we're not going to even discuss the divorce. When he sends you a letter, just say, thank you for your letter, I'll get back to you, right? And we then went about stabilizing the boat. So we found her another job, we got the application going, she changed jobs, she found a position that she could afford so that she could at least pay her bills. I started to encourage her to get a support network around her for her children, so that if she had to stay back late or whatever, because, you know, everything had been so focused, it was like a big knot, this whole divorce issue. Once we started to let that go, take the focus off it, take the heat off it, we focused, we found her a great job, we found the children started to, she set up some support networks around her, which she hadn't had before. We started to look at her fun and her fitness, got her back into the pool, started to get her to go out and to take, you know, to have a bit of fun. And now it's been a year later, and she's just gone through her divorce settlement. And let me tell you, she is so powerful. Her husband is actually shaking at the knees, and she's got everything that she wanted very fairly. I always believe that you have to come from a place of fairness, and you know, you don't do bad things or wrong things. But by taking the heat and the focus off it for 6 months, stabilizing her boat, making sure that she and her children were safe and protected, and that they had a roof over their head, and that all of those basic needs were taken care of, we could then start to go back into negotiating her divorce settlement. And she became so powerful within herself, because she was standing on such solid ground again, that when she went back into conversation with her ex-husband about the divorce and the divorce proceedings, she came from a completely different place, and the results that she got were amazing. And I mean, you know, she's blossoming now, and we're about to look at what to do with her divorce settlement and the money and where to invest it and all of those sorts of things. And I promise you, this took about 8 months of coaching, and of if you'd have met her in the beginning, you know, it was really, really pitiful what was happening to her, and she was just spiraling down. So, I mean, I don't like to share too much about some of my clients. Obviously, it's very important that you maintain a level of confidentiality, but you know, there are so many women who are in the same boat of her. They have the rug pulled out from underneath them, and it's about looking at how we can stabilize the boat right now to make sure that you are safe, and then we go back into battle, as it were, or back into looking at how we can move on from there.
Oh, that's a wonderfully inspiring real-life story of your client, you know, for somebody who thought that everything was lost and they were starting to fall apart, that they can come back. So, you know, for all those people out there watching and listening, just understand that today is just today. If you feel like it's not working for you, there is a tomorrow. And it sounds like your client went through a metamorphosis, a transformation an internal, inside-out transformation from being quite beaten, as in beaten down, not physically, but emotionally. On the canvas, and she got up. But she got up because she's got you as a coach. So that is the point I want to make to people, that you don't have to do it on your own. Yes, you do hire a coach. And the first thing, if you say that I can't afford it, my question and challenge to you is, how can you afford it so that it makes a difference, a remarkable, significant difference in your life that allows you to flourish afterwards? So ask yourself that question, how can I afford it? Not, oh, I can't afford it, a coach is too expensive, can't you see I have bills? Yes, you have bills. Everybody has bills. As long as you're above the ground, you have bills. So it's a case of, how can I afford it? So how did you get your client to get to that stage, just very quickly?
Well, I actually take it one step further. I think, how can you not afford to? Like, it's like, just looking at the results, just taking this one client, and this happens to all my clients, looking at where they were then and where they are now. We all know we set goals, plans, targets, and you know, you end up having the same conversation with people year after year after year. Somebody, once they've got coaching, they're very, very different. Like, they move. And so it's, you know, we spend money on health, and certainly here in America, I'm gobsmacked by the amount of energy that is people expel on not just looking after their health, but the whole healthcare system here in America is just unbelievable. But that's a whole other conversation. But the thing is that if you are unhealthy and you're feeling toxic because, you know, you're stuck in your life and you're miserable and you've got a shitty job and you're in a shitty marriage and all of that sort of stuff, your health is going to deteriorate really, really badly. And so my question to you is not, how can I afford a coach, is how can you not afford a coach? And I mean from an energy level. I know I am now living life on my terms, and I am in a very, very different space than where I was even 5 years ago. And you know, people who know me will, you know, I was a blibbering, slobbering mass. My business had gone down, et cetera, a few more years ago than that. But the person that I am now, I would not be where I am if I didn't have had the support of my own coaches. And I believe in it very, very strongly. And,
okay.
And to have
just on the last note, we have to go. Where can they find you?
FunnyMasteryForWomen.com. That's my website on there. I'm running programs all over Australia. I'm going to be doing some here in America. On my coaching, if you just remember that one website, you can actually go to contact me, and I can take you, direct you to other websites. Prosperity Point Proprietary Limited is my coaching company, but that might be a bit of a mouthful. Just go to moneymasteryforwomen.com. That's my workshop. I'm running that all around the country in Australia. I'm also going to be planning on doing a bit of work, some of that maybe here in New York. And if you go there and just put right, contact me, I'll be in touch with you, and really, really happy to share the coaching journey with you, because it is really important. And certainly, as you know, Lorway, as I know, I would definitely, and I know you definitely wouldn't be where you are without it. So,
yes.
Thank you for this opportunity.
I definitely believe in that. So, moneymasteryforwomen.com, that's where you can get in touch with Camilla. What you've heard today is something that you need, and I think for some women, yes, don't stick your head in the sand, be proactive, take action, live the life you were supposed to live. That is your calling and that is your destiny. So on that note, on behalf of Real Coaching Radio and Money and Your Mindset, I'd like to thank you, Camilla Mendoza, for an inspirational, entertaining, but most of all, empowering 1 hour with you. So thank you, Camilla.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Lorway. And to everybody out there, live life on your terms, girls. It's way too short to be doing anything else.
Fantastic.
Bye-bye. See you.
Bye.
Today's podcast is brought to you by obesityhotline.com.